Through dangers untold and hardships unnumbered, I have fought my way here to the castle beyond the Goblin City to make this podcast part of the Goblin Broadcast Network at gbncom.com. You have no power over me.
Welcome to episode 15 of The Tome. I am your Tome host, Jeff Greiner. The Tome is a D&D review podcast, and in this episode, we will be delving into the labyrinth of Dungeon Magazine number 146. Welcome again to episode 15 of The Tome, Dungeon 146. First, you're going to see some format changes. Again. Yes, I know, I recently made some little tweaks. This time I'm going to sort of rearrange a few things and make some changes, preparing for some changes in the industry coming up and some other things going on. As I listen to more and more podcasts, I keep tweaking mine, trying to make it this the best show that I can for you guys. One of the things you'll notice is that I'm moving emails and other feedback to the end. So those who don't want to hear it and want to get right into the review, they can do that. Second, you'll notice that this time the review section of the episode features the Tome's first reporter, William Paul. He and I have been talking about reviewing Dungeon Magazine for a while, and he has taken up the challenge. This is the coolest thing ever for the Tome, and I hope it continues to work out. This is relevant to bring up now because it has something to do with my response to the latest news about Dungeon and Dragon magazines, but more of this will come later. I have a goal that one day I will be hosting the Tome podcast, where it will become a weekly show, and 3 weeks out of the month are shows done by other reviewers. And I do the introduction, and I can do a closing, and sort of host this show that here includes opinions and reviews from other reporters that are part of the Tome family. So if anyone else is out there is interested in being a reporter for the show, send me an email, and we'll start figuring out how you might contribute to the show. I've already talked to a few other people about this. Third, I'm going to start trying to talk a bit about some D&D news that is out there. Things that I notice between shows that are out there in the press or on the internet, and I think are interesting, and I'm going to sort of bring them up at this point in the show. This is particularly in response to the upcoming end of the print versions of Dungeon and Dragon magazines. They won't be giving us news anymore, so I'm going to do my part and try to keep you informed. So if you find news out there, shoot me an email and maybe a link. The last bit of news about the show. I have some thoughts on the big changes in Dungeon and Dragon magazines, and you may have heard some of them, and you'll probably hear more. And in the second segment of this episode, after you hear the Dungeon review, I'm going to include a spot that I recently did for the Misfit Brew podcast over at the House of the Harping Monkey. They aired it at the beginning of May, and now you can hear my rant that was in their show here, too. No point in not using a perfectly good rant. Hope you enjoy. As for news in the gaming industry and in the D&D industry these days, a couple of things, not a whole bunch. First of all, Tom Moldvay has recently passed away. Tom was a game designer from the early days of TSR, the company that first brought the world of D&D to life. Tom was involved in such classic books as The Isle of Dread, which he did with Zeb Cook, and he had some impact on the very early development of the Mystara setting. Also, Paizo Publishing, in case you haven't heard this yet, has not had the license renewed to continue producing Dungeon and Dragon magazine. Wizards of the Coast is taking this brand back under their wings and are talking about taking the magazines to an online format, starting this fall after the Savage Tides adventure path has ended in Dungeon. In similar news, Margaret Weiss, co-creator of the Dragonlance setting, has announced that her company has also lost the license to produce Dragonlance RPG material. Wizards of the Coast has been a little bit less forthcoming about this bit of news, claiming that this may not be entirely the case, or that they might be in talks with other companies or that they might be taking that brand back too. They're just not real clear about that. They didn't do the joint announcement like they did with Paizo. And then lastly, Green Ronin, a third-party publisher that I love, has recently gained the rights to create a Song of Ice and Fire RPG, based on the books by beloved fantasy author George R.R. Martin. So that's the news I found interesting of late. If you think there are some things I missed, let me know, and I might get it in on the next episode.
Hi, this is Mick Bradley,
Ray Lamond,
and Chris Miller. We're from the House of the Harping Monkey, the online fantasy tavern for gamers and fans of fantasy, myth, and geek culture.
If by some small chance the stuff that they serve you in those other fantasy taverns isn't spicy enough or out there enough for you, you might want to consider asking your friendly servers,
that would be us,
for a bottle of Misfit Brew.
It's not for everyone, to be sure, but if you're one of those rarefied folks who thinks maybe, just maybe, you're not sure, but you think we actually go somewhere when we dream, or perhaps that flash of movement you saw at the corner of your eye in the woods last evening was maybe a fairy?
Or if you just like geeky essays.
Or if you wonder if, on some mystic, collective, subconscious level, Middle Earth was real, or you actually think that maybe there's something to the Harping Monkey motto, myth is truth.
Or if you just like geeky essays.
If you're not necessarily a sucker for every paranormal, preternatural, new age claim that's out there, but you can't help but wonder if maybe, just maybe, there are more things in heaven and earth than are dreamt of in our philosophies.
Or if you just like pretentious Shakespearean references.
Then you might like a taste of Misfit Brew.
So come visit us at the Harping Monkey Tavern at harpingmonkey.com. Your first pint of brew is on the house.
Actually, they're all on the house, aren't they?
Okay, so even better. Misfit Brew, a podcast from the House of the Harping Monkey. Available at harpingmonkey.com, iTunes, and lots of other fine podcasty places.
Slancha!
Well, for this episode's review, you'll get to hear William Paul reviewing Dungeon 146. Many times I have had requests from people to get a dungeon review, and now, thanks to William, you haven't. Or at least you do, until Dungeon goes away. So without further ado, here's the great review that William has done for Dragon 146.
This is William Paul with a review of Dungeon, Issue 146, May 2007. The issue hit newsstands on the 11th of April, 2007. We start the review with the recurring articles. So the first one up would be Dungeoncraft. This month, The Perfect Pantheon. Written by Wolfgang Bauer, illustrated by Kyle Hunter. This article contains tips on creating your own pantheon, setting up for your own group of deities, how to put domains and apply unorthodox, non-stereotypical choices. Everyone expects, you know, for example, the article states, everyone expects the sun god to be good. You know, Pelor and Lathander, I think it is, from the Forgotten Realms, are always viewed as good. This article, you know, Mr. Bauer suggests as an option, you know, go ahead and make your sun god lawful evil. You know, hey, there's no one that says you can't. Fairly good article, you know, as with any Dungeoncraft article, only two to three pages long. But it really does provide some definite assistance if you are in the process of world building with that small area in regard to creating your own set of deities. Of course, other good resources to use with this would be Deities and Demigods, the 3.0 publication from Wizards of the Coast. Overall, a very good article. Other tips that this article indicates is that, you know, you don't need to have a separate god for every little niche thing in your world. You know, start small. Have each god multitask. Take care of multiple things. The next article, the first in two additions to the campaign workbook, is Bandit Gangs, part of the cast portion of the campaign workbook, written by Russell Brown, illustrated by Kyle Hunter. And this article, of course, as with all campaign workbooks, is just a little over one page, and it describes briefly how, you know, when traveling through the wilderness, you know, along the highways and byways of your fantasy worlds, you have, on occasion, run across bandit gangs, you know, highway thieves that, you know, go out and rob people, seemingly just to rob people. What Mr. Brown suggests is, you know, maybe not make all bandits so one-dimensional. Maybe these people that are robbing travelers have reasons behind what they do. It provides three examples of, you know, what you can possibly do with these bandits. It gives an example of a rightful heir, someone who's deposed from their crown and, you know, steals from people to be able to get capital to mount a revolt and rebellion against the evil usurper that's currently on the throne. There's another example called Nature's Judgment. It describes a group of rangers and druids that only attack people if there's evidence of those travelers mistreating their mounts and pets. The third group listed in the article is a very interesting group called the Curse of Olidamara, and the curse involves some treasure that these bandits have stolen, and since they tried to steal it, they have certain penalties associated with them that they now have to try to get free of the curse. This campaign workbook, Russell Brown, has provided some very good insight, very good ideas that not everybody always thinks about. And it's good, definitely good food for thought. The second installment of the campaign workbook for the month, The Journey, is titled Volcano. And written by F. Wesley Schneider, illustrated by Kyle Hunter. And this page, slightly over a page article, also deals with providing crunch, providing the mechanics of the environmental hazard known as, yeah, you guessed it, a volcano. It provides, as I said, the mechanics for this. It lists off, you know, lava, a pyroclastic flow, geysers, gives a small little blurb about, you know, cryovolcanoes are also out there, could be in, you know, the Arctic wastes, and so, you know, something else your PCs can run into. Very good information. It indicates that, yes, volcanoes and other environmental hazards are kind of summarized in the DMG, but this is a whole lot more meat to those rule sets, especially in regard to volcanoes. Now, this month, the Map of Mystery shows us a typical drow outpost. The only problem I've ever had with the map of mysteries in the issues of Dungeon is somehow it doesn't list who the cartographer is. It doesn't list who actually made the map. They're very beautiful maps. They always take up the very last page of the issue of Dungeon. But I'm not sure why they're always uncredited. But this drow outpost, it's very, very good artwork. It has a small chapel to Loth. It has a listing of different barracks, places for the driders to hang out. And so if you ever find yourself in need of a drow outpost as your adventurers are going through the Underdark, then this map of mystery will definitely be a boon to you. Now that we've gotten through all the regular articles for the dungeon, we move on to the real bulk of the magazine, the three modules, three adventures that are provided with each issue of Dungeon. The first adventure, which is typically four levels, first through fifth, a low-level setting, is titled Escape from Meanlock Prison. It's written by Tim and Eileen Connors. Now, when I first started reading through this article, a little flag went up in my head, and I told myself, Tim and Eileen Connors, where have I heard that name before? And what I realized is this is not the first adventure written by Tim and Eileen Connor in Dungeon. I believe it's actually their second. Their first publication in Dungeon was a fantastic, I believe, also low-level module, low-level adventure for first-level characters as well, called Siege of the Spider Eaters. Now, that adventure is located in Dungeon 137. And so, if you find that this adventure, Escape from Meanlock Prison, is very good and do not have Dungeon 137, I highly suggest you picking that up. It is a very good adventure by itself. Now, sorry for the tangent, sorry to get distracted, but I felt that that was worth mentioning. I was highly impressed with both of these adventures. The illustration for this adventure is done by Julie Dillon, with cartography by who I've deemed the map monkey of Piazzo, Rob Lazzaretti. The adventure basically takes place in a prison. And the PCs, the party, is tasked with the job to go to a prison, pick up two inmates, and deliver them to a separate prison. What the PCs find out when they get to the prison is that some of the inmates have been able to escape and are now posing as the warden. And so, as they're escorted down into the actual prison itself to be able to release the inmates that they're looking for, they need to determine if the inmates that they're looking for, that they've been told, are the ones that they're looking for, are actually the ones that they're looking for, and then find a way out of the prison. It is a very good adventure. This adventure can be played as a horror adventure. There is a sidebar in the adventure to help with setting the mood, giving tips on making changes to the gaming room, gaming table, to help your players get a feel for the shining nature of the adventure. What exactly is going on here, the Cthulhu-ness, possibly, of the adventure. I don't want to give too much away in regard to how it is that you could really freak out your players, but it definitely is there if you want to emphasize that horror aspect of the adventure. The next adventure, The Spawns of Sihon, is part two of the three-part campaign arc Seeds of Sihon. This is written by Tom Dryder Gantz, Matthew Conklin III, Stefan Happ, Stefan S. Greer, and Ashavan Doyen. And after reading the first installment of the Seeds of Sihon last month, I was very much looking forward to seeing what takes place in the second installment. It was a very good adventure last time, and this time the second installment is also very good. It's illustrated by Udon with Todd Gack, Jim Subkovich, and Shane Law. Cartography done by Rob Lazzaretti. The setting, again, is a dungeon crawl, just like Escape from Meanlock Prison. What happened in part one is the PCs came across a city that was pretty much overrun by an epidemic of drug addiction. And they were tasked to find the source of this new drug that was on the streets of the city called the Green Welcome. Now, part two of the Seeds of Sihon start off with the PCs having found that source, destroying that source of the drug, but now they have to investigate, yes, that source in the city is gone for the distribution of the drug. Now we want to find out where it originally came from. There were some very, very unusual side effects of that drug, and so it is well worth investigating to find out where it came from, make sure something like that doesn't happen again. So the PCs head off to a small area just south of the city and enter into a tomb to investigate that new drug. They come across essentially a slime ooze type pool of liquid gunk type, I don't know how other to describe it, that is called Sihon. This green ooze is essentially the original substance that drug had been generated from. And the side effects, the overdose side effects that the drug Green Welcome had, which was to turn people into plant creatures, the green Sihon can do with just momentary contact rather than multiple doses of that drug. It's basically your Green Welcome concentrated. And so the PCs, by the end of the adventure, have destroyed, or hopefully have destroyed, the people responsible for collecting that substance and using it as a drug, and potentially the drug, the green slime itself. And then you would think that would be the end of the story arc, but no, actually, there are adventure hooks that lead on, that lead to the next and final part of the campaign arc, the story arc, for the Inscrutable Ones. And so we'll just have to wait until next issue to find out the details of that. The Spawn of Sihon is intended for mid-level characters, which that would be 6th through 12th levels, and the actual articles written for 9th level characters. The third and final adventure listed in the magazine is The Serpents of Scuttle Cove. That is part 8 of the Savage Tide Adventure Path. It is written by Richard Pett, illustrated by Ben Wooten and Warren Mahi. Cartography again by Robert Lazzaretti. The setting is an urban setting, and the adventure indicates that the PC should be level 15 when beginning the adventure, this chapter, and should be able to reach level 17 by the end. Now, basically what has gone on with the Savage Tide up to this point is the PC started off in a city called Sazerene, and they did a few things in Sazerene, then moved on to the Isle of Dread. They found some weird things going on with the Isle of Dread, and have gone out and taken care and resolved all those issues on the Isle of Dread. And now, when the PCs finally finished with the Isle of Dread, they came back to Farshore, their little headquarters, an outpost on the Isle of Dread. And now that the when they get back to Farshore, they find out that their boss, their patron, so to speak, Lavinia Vanderborn, has been kidnapped. She's been kidnapped by her brother, Vanthus. Now, people who are up on the Savage Tide are saying, wait a second, Vanthus is dead. How could he kidnap his sister? Well, you know, there's just some things about making pacts with demons and devils and coming back as an undead Death Knight. Don't you just hate recurring villains? The PCs have to follow Vanthus and Lavinia to a city town called Scuttle Cove. Once the players get to Scuttle Cove, they have to determine what in this, you know, where to find her in the city, how to go about finding her. The PCs find some help from some NPCs that they met earlier in the adventure path. Finding and getting to this assistance that will be able to help them find Lavinia, and then working their way towards Lavinia in a pirate city that's in the midst of a civil war is quite an adventurous romp. It is very fun. I can't wait to get my players to this portion of the Savage Tide. This article does present rules for a new creature, a new demon called an Orloth demon. And the demon itself, it looks like, is CR-15. It has a description of this horrific serpentine demon shears two humanoid torsos atop a single coiling body. Each torso waves a set of six humanoid arms, all clutching cruel scimitars. The monster's two baboon-like heads glower menacingly, their eyes heady and bright with hate. Very, very good article. Very, very good adventure. Now, the only thing remaining in this issue of Dungeon is a backdrop article detailing the city of Scuttle Cove. It provides a whole lot more depth and information about the pirate city. Advantages of this is, of course, you have the information if you ever want to run other adventures in Scuttle Cove, not just the Savage Tide. As I mentioned a little bit in the description of that prior adventure, the city of Scuttle Cove is currently under a civil war. There's about six different factions in the city all vying for control. We have the Crimson Fleet, the Dealer Consortium, Monastery of Dire Hunger, the Pomfrey House, the Protectorate, and the Seventh Coil. Now, of course, players that are going through the Savage Tide should be familiar with the Crimson Fleet. They've popped up here and there in prior chapters of Savage Tide. And anyone who has issue 95 of Dungeon also has some additional information on the Porphyry House. The backdrop article provides information, as I said, about those various factions. It provides detailed description of 20 different locations and provides 13 different NPCs to have the PCs meet. People from a chaotic good male ranger to a neutral evil halfling bard. The article itself is full of great plot hooks and things to pull characters in, you know, inspiration to design your own adventures in the city. And the article also provides the statistics for a new minor artifact, the Bracers of Red Rapture. Without going into too much detail, the bracers essentially provide bonuses on pain-associated effects. A little bit in regard to damage, but not all of it. It is a very powerful item, obviously, minor artifact. Not too many of those, you know, floating around. But with characters at level 17, by the time that they get to Scuttle Cove, possibly it is a good piece of treasure for them to find. With that being the end of the backdrop article, I would have to say, overall, this issue of Dungeon is a very good article. There's nothing in the article I was displeased with. The only small negative I could find in the article from all the articles, all the adventures, is that map mystery, uncredited. You'd think someone would want to have their name associated with it so they could get credit for it. But overall, as I said, great issue of Dungeon, well worth the cover price of $10, $9.99. This is William Paul, reviewing issue 146 of The Dungeon. Thank you.
Thanks again, William, for this great review, and I really hope that you continue on as a reporter for The Tome. This has been equal or better than the quality that I usually expect from The Tome. If you internet people out there have some thoughts on William's review, let me know. Next up, I'm going to let you listen to my recent Misfit Brew rant about the end of Dungeon and Dragon as we know it. I might be irrational, I might be silly, but it's sort of what I think, or at least it was a few weeks ago when I recorded it. Thanks again to the Harping Monkey folks for giving me a chance to rant. So, Dragon and Dungeon are going the way of the internet. Wizards of the Coast has taken the license that they've been more or less selling to Paizo Publishing, a company that was basically created just to publish those magazines. And they've taken that license back and left Paizo out spinning around this great big internet world on its own. I'm not real sure where to go with this. I'm a little bit speechless, and at the same time, here I am talking about it. This has a huge impact on me, personally, and The Tome, especially. I've been a longtime Dragon subscriber, and I've often said on my show that it is by far the best value in gaming, which I hear may be one of the reasons that Wizards of the Coast wanted it back, to move it to an online format so that it wouldn't be competing with their other products. The idea being, why would people spend $15 or $20 or $35 or whatever on a nice hardbound Wizards of the Coast adventure when they could buy two or three Dungeon magazines and get the same amount of adventure for a much, much lower price? I don't know. But I've been loving Dragon for a long, long time. I've never been a huge Dungeon fan. But it definitely has its place, and I definitely have seriously been considering looking at it more seriously in the future, and of course, guess not. I think this is the beginning of something big in Dungeons & Dragons. And I'm not sure what it is, and I'm not sure yet if it's going to be a good thing or a bad thing, but I'm willing to be patient. I don't want to condemn this move before we know what it's going to mean. So yeah, I'm willing to give it a shot. I'm willing to wait and see what this big change means. I think this is really going to signal the beginning of something that could be huge. This could be the signal that is the change in Dungeons & Dragons that leads into this new era of gaming where there's more of a mesh between the normal, traditional style of gaming and a new style of gaming that relies at least partially or is enhanced, I guess, partially by electronic medium in a way that it hasn't been done before. In which case, if it's done well, I think could be really good for the industry. There's been lots of talk and rumor and discussion lately and debate about can tabletop role-playing survive in a world where everything is going more and more digital. And there's been lots of doom and gloom speak and all that kind of stuff about what's going to happen with gaming, and it's all dead and there's nothing that we can do about it. It's all been set in stone and it's been decided. I wonder if this isn't the natural evolution or the beginnings of a natural evolution to change that. When you take a paper medium and you're changing it into an online medium, if they're not going to use that brand to turn into something really cool and really neat, and I'm kind of hopeful that that's where it's going. At the same time, I'm incredibly worried that this is going to be the sign of more greed mongering from a big corporation that bought out the little company of TSR, that bought out the little game of Dungeons and Dragons that started out as this small little independent thing and turned into the most popular, widely played role-playing game ever. And I'm a little worried that it's just another play to pull in money, that there's been talk that maybe that Wizards of the Coast is consolidating their licenses and all their brands and bringing them all back home. They've recently done the same thing with Dragonlance. And so there's talk that maybe they're doing this ready to spring on a fourth edition of the game that's not OGL, that's not open for other people to use the rules, so you're going to get rid of all those third-party products to compete with. There's been talk that maybe they're doing that, consolidating those brands to make it really easy and nice to sell the package to other companies that they're trying to spin D&D off and sell it to another company that wants to take that on. And all these things have me a little bit concerned. The motivations behind this move is what has me a little worried. If their motivation is greed, then is this going to ruin the game? Is this going to finally drive the wedge between the industry and the customers that cannot be reconciled? And is this going to be the first note of a funeral dirge bringing about the end of Dungeons & Dragons? I think it can go either way. I think this could be the first note in a really epic song, bringing Dungeons & Dragons to new heights and new greatness, or I think it could be that first note of a dirge calling forth the end of the industry. And it leaves me a little apprehensive. At this point, there's nothing I can do. There's nothing because I don't know what's going on. What Wizards of the Coast is being a little secretive about the situation, and they seem to be taking the attitude of, just trust us, we know more than you do, it'll all be okay, and you'll be happy with us in the end, or at least you'll stick with us and keep giving us your money. And I wonder if that's not maybe a poor strategy. I don't know. Maybe that's a good strategy. I'm not a business person. That's not my forte. Maybe that's the way things have to be done. But it does leave the customers very apprehensive, I know, when these kinds of things happen. I don't know. It's a huge gamble. It can go really, really well. It can go really, really badly. And I am really worried about where this is headed. And I'm on my one hand, I'm really excited. And I sort of got over that doom and gloom feeling that I had about 6 months back when there was a lot of talk about 4th edition and all this stuff going on. And I just really didn't want to deal with that again and thought, you know what? As much as I love the game, this might be the nail in the coffin that drives me away from Dungeons & Dragons. And I do a Dungeons & Dragons podcast. That's all I do is Dungeons & Dragons on my podcast. So that's a huge, huge deal for me to say that maybe I don't want to stay up with the game. But then I sort of got over that, and I heard some things that sort of waylaid some of my fears, and I was feeling a little okay, and 4th edition might come, and I would be okay with it, and I might roll with it and be very happy with that. But this move has me very, very concerned. It seems clear to me that there is a customer base. There are people that want the print and paper magazine. Every report that we're hearing is that Paizo was making money, that the brands of Dungeons & Dragons were successful. That tells me that they were selling magazines. There were people out there that wanted the product that they were creating. I'm worried that Wizards of the Coast is going to take that away. Now, from what I've seen, there hasn't been anything official. And I've read all the official press releases, and I've even heard plenty of a few interviews with industry insiders and people in the companies about what's going on. So what I'm not hearing is that there won't be a paper magazine. I looked for it. They're saying that they're going to move the content of Dungeon and Dragon to an online format. In my mind, that does not by necessity, that does not by definition mean that Wizards of the Coast couldn't continue printing a paper magazine along with whatever this online content is that they're going with that they haven't told us anything at all about because it's such a huge secretive thing. Although there's some talk that maybe it's going to be a huge community building thing, which can be neat. We'll have to see. Now, it certainly seems that they're going to do away with the print. They're going to get rid of the paper version, which seems silly. Why automatically, without even considering it, just instantly take a segment of your customers and alienate them and take away something that they want. I get the idea of doing new things, of adding new things, of bringing an edge to the industry, of bringing this new and exciting technology and advancements and all these things into the game and making it cool for everybody. I don't get why doing that by necessity means leaving behind people who like what was already being done. And I'm not arguing to keep new rules and do all that kind of stuff. I understand that sometimes rules are better if they evolve into something good. I tell you what, 3rd edition was a massive improvement over the previous edition, and 3.5 is an improvement over 3, but I don't see 3.5 as broken. And that's where a 4th edition has had me concerned in the past. I seem to be rambling, and I'm getting all over the place with this. That's because I'm doing this sort of as a... You're just sort of hearing my mental vomit here, I guess, is one way to put it. I'm putting out my thoughts as they come to me. This is my own little mini little rant about what's going on and my own thoughts. And it has me worried, and at the same time, it has me excited. And at this point, I've given up the doom and gloom. I've given up the big excitement. And I've set myself right in the middle, and I'm just waiting. And I'm in anticipation. And I'm just thinking to myself, okay, this could be good, this could be bad, and I just don't know right now. I don't like it, I don't like that I don't know, but right now I just don't know. So I'm going to stay calm, I'm going to wait, and if things go very, very, very badly, and this is the beginning of the end for Dungeons & Dragons, well, I've got lots and lots of books to keep me very busy for a long time if I choose to use them. Once again, this has been Jeff Greiner from The Tome talking to you at the House of the Harping Monkey. Thanks for letting me visit, guys. It's been fun. Hopefully, people aren't too turned off by the ramblings that I've put forth here, and hopefully this gives you something to talk a little bit about. I'm just glad that you guys gave me the opportunity to get out some thoughts and some ideas about this. Thanks again to the Harping Monkey folks for letting me do that and for letting me get my ideas out quickly and honestly and sort of have a stream of consciousness about that. And hopefully I didn't just go completely insane on everybody. Now let's look at some listener feedback. This one is from William Paul, who you've just heard from. Greetings. I'd just like to say hello and let you know that you have a new fan. I came across your podcast while exploring iTunes. I've downloaded all 13 episodes and started listening to them from the beginning. So far, I've only gotten through episodes 1 through 6. I find your reviews very informative, pointing out the positives and negatives of the products. I can also say, after listening to several in one sitting, the difference in your voice between episode 1 and 6 is noticeable. It seems you're more comfortable with yourself, more at ease when giving out information and opinion. In your podcast, you state that you are open to the idea of suggestions on what else to review, and even that you'd accept reviews from others. I think a review of Dungeon would be very complimentary to the coverage that you provide to Dragon. Obviously, it would be tricky without giving up too many spoilers, but there is more to the magazine than just the typical 3-adventure module fare. Who knows? Maybe I'll attempt to provide a review myself. William Paul. And this is the email that got William and I talking. And it started off with me explaining sort of why I haven't done Dungeon in the past and how I'm looking for people to report for the show. And he sent in a written review of Dungeon 145, and I thought it was just perfect. And then before I could get it recorded, he emailed me again and said 146 came in, and he recorded it himself, as you've heard. And it was awesome. I love his review, and I hope he keeps doing this for us. And if he wants to keep doing other stuff for The Tome, I think that would be incredible. And I hope more of you decide to get involved. Listener participation in this show and other people's participation in this show, I think, is the best thing for the show, because it allows people to get all kinds of opinions, not just mine, all kinds of different views on a subject and all kinds of different people's thoughts on what's going on, or on an article or on a magazine or on a book or whatever. And I think the more voices that can contribute to this voice, the better this is for everybody involved. The next email. Hi, I just discovered your podcast while listening to Dragon's Landing podcast, and I love it. It's great to have a D&D-specific podcast to listen to. I've already gone back and listened to many of the episodes. A few questions and comments. What are you going to do to replace Dragon magazine reviews with when Dragon isn't published anymore this fall? I'll respond to that real quick. Again, I talked about earlier in the show, my goal, my vision for the Tome is that eventually more and more people start reporting for the Tome and start sending in reviews for the Tome, or there's guest reviews or regular spots for some people, like I would expect William maybe to keep coming back every month with a new review for Dungeon for us. So some regular reporters, some guest reporters, some guest reviews sort of thing. I would love to the show to go to a weekly format. I would love the show to have other people doing all kinds of stuff, and myself, I want to keep doing the reviews. I want to keep doing these things. It's sort of what got me into it. So I'd like to think that I will continue to get in at least one a month myself and then fill in the other weeks with other people's. The one biggest limitation to me doing more content for the show is that I simply don't have the time to read constantly everything and then write reviews constantly and then record reviews and then doing all that kind of stuff. Editing is enough of a chore. Anytime I edit a show, you can take the length of the show and probably triple the length of any given show, and that's how much time I put into the editing of the show. So editing is enough of a chore. But reading is a joy, and I just don't have the time to do a lot of it. So that's what I see replacing the Dragon Magazine reviews, is I want to see more and more involvement from you guys to sort of fill out the show. Continuing with this email, I greatly enjoyed your review of Complete Mage, especially your views on the prestige classes and spells. Any chance you'd comment on some of the older completes? I'll respond to this again here real quick. I would love to do more of the older completes. I have all of the older completes. I have a lot of older books that I could review. I tend to focus on trying to review newer stuff because it seems to be more relevant for everybody, right? Because I know that there's more people that don't have it at that point that might be interested in the information and the opinion. But as I run into some time and some free time to go back and re-record some old stuff, I would love to go back and look at some of the completes. Let me know which ones specifically you want me to talk about. Maybe I'll do something over the summer when I might have a little more time. And I'll try to put together several reviews of other completes. He continues, I'd love to see a review of the Tome of Battle, as this is stuffed with great crunch and character ideas. Speaking of crunch, I'd love to see a Build of the Month segment where you highlight great character builds using the mechanics of the new book. You could highlight stat placement preference, feat selection, and routes to prestige classes. There are tons of ideas going on at the Wizards of the Coast character optimization forum. I love the Class Acts articles in Dragon. Perhaps you could do a segment of your show highlighting some of the variant class features or feats. I wouldn't mind having a segment on D&D-specific news, like what's on the WotC site or Ian World. As you can probably tell, I'm a big Crunch fan. Can you suggest any additional podcasts? Once again, keep up the great work. From Seth in Detroit. And I've also continued some conversations with Seth about some of these things. First of all, Tome of Battle. I don't own Tome of Battle, but that is one that I'd like to hear a lot about. Maybe I would be interested in it if somebody let me know what it was all about. So if somebody wants to send in a review of Tome of Battle, I would be happy to put it on the air and share it with people. And maybe go out and get it myself if it sounds good and give you some thoughts of my own. The Bill of the Month idea that Seth brings up. He and I have talked a little bit about this. I love D&D. I'm very familiar with the rules. And yet for some reason, I've never been great at sort of the optimization or the build or that kind of stuff focus on some aspects of D&D. It's just not been my strength in the game. I'm great at utilizing strategies that I'm familiar with, but coming up with new strategies and new builds and new concepts and being fresh and unique about that kind of stuff is just not my strength. But if there's somebody out there, and Seth has been talking about maybe getting involved this way, but if there's anybody out there at all who wants to get involved in adding a little bit of crunch to the show and doing a regular segment on the show, maybe a monthly segment on the show or every month or every other month or whatever you feel comfortable with, that wants to put together a build of the month that's just maybe a 15, 20-minute segment of great crunchiness, I'd love to include it in the show. and in response to the comment on news. As you've noticed, I've actually taken Seth's suggestions, and I'm starting to do news on the site. And that was partially in direct response to what Seth suggested, because I figured that's pretty easy to do. And it's partially in response to the loss of Dungeon and Dragon, like I mentioned before. The next email. I'm a recent new listener to your podcast. Wow, all three of them were new listeners this time around. Picked it up 3 weeks ago, and am two episodes short of being current. I was going to email you and ask you how to find play-by-email games, and suggest that you plug those sites on your podcast. I went to your website and noticed that you have an opening for your play-by-email game, and was wondering if it was still open. And he gives me some background information about himself, because he's interested in joining the Tome Ravenloft game that I talked about and started a while back. Keep up the good work. I find the podcast very interesting. I am in the group of listeners that does not really care much for Dragon Magazine, although I do enjoy the podcast about them, as I find that very few GMs allow much of the character content into their campaigns until such a time that it's released in its $40 hardcover. So this content is of little use to the community as a whole. But the other Dragon content is of great use to GMs and world builders, and I find your review of this type of content very useful. In short, although I am not a big fan of Dragon, I think its inclusion in your podcast should remain. Additionally, I find that the content of Dungeon is sometimes superior to that of Dragon, and maybe you could occasionally review a Dungeon Mag issue as well. I have to get back to work, but I will send you another email about your podcast and maybe even find a way that I could contribute to the podcast. Thanks, Ron. And Ron has, and I have even talked a little bit. He found the instant messengers information that I list on the website, and he's talked to me a little bit, and we've chit-chatted about this. A few things. First of all, play-by-email games. I don't know that I'm going to be of a lot of help trying to find play-by-email games. I've been part of sort of a community now for 6, 7, 8 years that we call ourselves the Woodshed, for various inside reasons. And we've been playing together as play-by-email as sort of a core group for all that time now. And we don't even bother to look outside very often for games anymore. We normally just look amongst ourselves. We'll look outside sometimes for players, but we don't look outside very much for new games. Most of the time we have more than enough people running enough games within our own little group. So I don't know a lot of great places to find play-by-email games. Now, play-by-post games, I could help you out with. The guys over at Groovy Gamers have a really great community of play-by-post going on. And I'm in a few games there. It's going all right. It's not my ideal way to play the game, I don't think. I like play-by-email much better than play-by-post, I think. But maybe that's just because that's what I'm used to, and I've been doing it for a long time. But if I hear of any good sources to find good play-by-email games, I will definitely pass that on in the future. I'm glad you're enjoying the Dragon Magazine reviews, and I'll continue to do those right up until the time the Dragon Magazine disappears, at least disappears as it is currently known. And I hope that you enjoy William's review of Dungeon, and hope that you get as much quality of information out of that. I've never been a big Dungeon subscriber myself. I've never gotten a lot out of Dungeon, because I've always been of the sort that always wants to create my own stories and my own adventures and doesn't want to use pre-made stuff. Some of the content that's currently in Dungeon used to actually be in Dragon, like the Dungeon Craft and some of the world-building stuff that's in there now used to be in Dungeon, in Dragon Magazine. And when it moved, I missed it, but it wasn't enough to really get me into Dungeon enough to pick it up regularly. But William's review of it is great, and hopefully that will help me, and that will help you guys figure out what parts of Dungeon do you really like and what parts of Dungeon just not your thing. And maybe I'll start picking up more magazines now that William's going to let me know what's out there and what's good and what's not. Well, that's our review of Dungeon 146, and I suppose my rant about the big changes in Dungeon and Dragon magazines. As always, I urge and welcome listeners to help the show in any way you can. One of the best ways is to participate. Send in your emails or audio comments to thetomeshow@gmail.com. Or let me know if you're interested in reporting for the show regularly. You can also instant message me, join the Tome Yahoo group, leave an audio, or call the Tome hotline at 206-984-1159. You can also dig the show at dig.com, vote for us at Podcast Alley, or leave an iTunes review. All of these things help the show get noticed, and I really appreciate that. Most of these things can be found at the website, if you didn't catch it on the show, at http://thetome.podbean.com. This has been episode 15, Dungeon 146 of
The Tome.
This is the coolest thing ever. For the tome. And three things that I noticed that this is particular, and in the second segment of this episode, you're going after about this thanks a win again. Learn to talk, Jeff. Like on the Watts. Any suggestion? Build of the month. One of the best ways to participate is to participate.